Hey everybody, it's Ted Hargrave from MarketingForHippies.com, and I'm joined here by Rebecca Tracy, who's in Wyoming doing some rock climbing right now. I met Rebecca years ago in Toronto, and back when she was studying as a nutritionist, and I'd just done a presentation at her school, and we randomly met and got to talking, and she's just continued to impress me, being an awesome person. And she's moved into this whole career being a, she calls it a life switch coach, and helping people bring more adventure into their lives. And so I just thought she would have some really interesting things to say about niche to add to the conversation. And so welcome, Rebecca. Good to have you.
Hi, Ted. Thanks.
Maybe if you could just sort of introduce yourself and just share your story of how you went from being a nutritionist or studying that to doing what you're doing now, and why you're doing it and all that.
Yeah, for sure. I went to nutrition school many years after I went to university and had sort of traveled the world and was trying to figure out what to do next. Never really knew what I wanted to do with my life. And nutrition sounded pretty cool, so I moved to Toronto and started going to school. And started realizing throughout the program and afterwards that I really loved, you know, I loved everything that I was learning, but the actual, you know, details of being a nutritionist, like writing menu plans and protocols and making recipes and all that kind of stuff, was not what I wanted to be doing. And so I remember actually sitting with you a few times, Ted, and going, how am I supposed to make, like, all of these passions into a business? And, like, I couldn't make it work because I soon realized that nutrition wasn't really it. It was right. What I loved about nutrition was working with people to give them the choice to choose how they want to feel and how they want to live. And so it was that underlying concept that I really loved about it, but I hated everything else to do with actually being a nutritionist. So I did some coaching courses through a really great coaching school, and after that, you know, completely abandoned nutrition and realized that it was the deeper work that I wanted to be doing with people. And kind of took some time of figuring out what that would really look like for me. And it came down to coaching, and I've always been one to kind of live my life a little bit more on the adventurous side, I guess, and, you know, always refusing to settle and have a very low tolerance for being unhappy. And, you know, that just came so naturally to me that I never thought of that as a viable business idea or, like, a viable niche. And through lots and lots of great coaching and leadership courses, I came to realize that that's actually not the way that everyone lives, and that is something unique that I have to offer. And so I decided to start my business based around that, working with other people to create really fun, adventurous lives and small businesses of their own.
It's interesting when you're saying that about that you realize you had this sort of adventurous nature and all of that, and that that your nature of who you are and what you're naturally drawn to is actually a gift that you could give to the world that not everybody else has. I'm just wondering if you can say any more about that, because I think that's a really profound point.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I was always this type of person who, you know, never wanted to settle into a job that I hated, and I could never imagine doing the 9-to-5 thing, and all I wanted to do was have adventures and travel the world and, you know, have fun. What
right.
a concept. And I always thought, well, I must be lazy, or I must be, like, just not willing to work hard, and, you know, someday I'm going to have to settle down and figure it all out. And through lots and lots of coaching, came to realize that that's actually a gift that I have, that I'm able to sort of just go with it and, you know, not really worry about what's to come. And I learned, you know, once I started my business, that I do actually know how to work hard, and I do actually have a passion for working when it's something that I'm passionate about. And I see this with a lot of people, that what comes so naturally to you, and, you know, where your strengths really lie, and, you know, what seems like second nature isn't to most people. And it seems like that's where the true gifts of your business lie, in that place where you might not even really recognize is one of your gifts until somebody else boldly points it out to you.
That's so interesting, because I could just see the flip side too. Somebody might actually be drawn to being a homebody and just being at home, and the thought of, like, going rock climbing in Wyoming or traveling Europe would be exhausting for them, and they actually have no real desire to do that. And I could see them also being like, God, what's wrong with me? I'm not very adventurous. I should be more adventurous. I, you know,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, I should be going out more, but they really just want to stay at home. And it can be so easy for people to make themselves wrong for that. And I'm curious how you see that as connected to this idea of sort of niche or who we work with or sort of finding our place in the world in terms of creating projects or creating a business. Because I think it's one thing to realize, like, okay, you know, I've got a gift of, you know, public speaking. I'm really good at encouraging people. Or, you know, I just did this call the other day with this fellow, David Waugh from Vancouver, and he does a lot of work around helping people find their life gifts, and beautiful guy. And it was just interesting, all these gifts that people might have that they wouldn't realize are gifts, like the gift of hosting. Some people are just like really love hosting events and parties, and that's a thing for them. Or they're really good at, they're really good cheerleaders. They're really good at organizing things, and like administration, you know, is just a natural thing for them. And it's really not for everybody, or math, or just logical thinking or problem solving. There's so many different gifts. And I'm curious what your experience has been in terms of, once you've identified that, I feel like that's, you know, sort of the first step, but then how do you take that into helping people figure out a niche or to turn that into something that they can do something with?
I think I've definitely noticed with the clients that I work with that even if they have this great business idea and they're feeling like super motivated, as soon as they start talking about like, well, who am I going to offer this to? It gets all contrived and confused, and all of the shoulds come in, and, you know, I should do it this way and this other person does it this way, so I guess I should just do that. And it seems that people are really hesitant to actually narrow it down. And I was too when I was trying to do nutrition for fear of excluding people. You know, I'm sure this is a common thing that you come across, like you don't want to rule anybody out, like anybody could be my client right now and I'd be happy with it.
Right.
You know, that kind of mentality when you start out. So I think realizing that that's not the case is, or that's not ideal, you know, you're not going to be serving everybody is a good start. And I also think that people really want to work with other people that, that they resonate with. So, I mean, for me, it was always, you know, wanting to travel and wanting to have adventures. And I only really want to work with people who, not who necessarily want the same things, but who have a similar set of values, people who value freedom and fun and adventure and, you know, living life on their own terms. Those are the kind of people that I want. And that's the kind of person that I am. And I think that this is the same for many people. I know when I was in nutrition school, a lot of people who stayed in nutrition and went off to sort of create their own business, they always focused it around, you know, whatever troubles they had gone through. So I had a friend who had always had like Crohn's and really bad digestive disorders, and that was her passion. She wanted to help people go through and come at the other end of, you know, what she had gone through. And I'm guessing that you see that a lot too, that, you know, our biggest, I don't want to say pain points because it's not always a pain, but, you know, what resonates most deeply within us seems to be the people that we most want to serve, people who are experiencing the same thing.
Yeah, I talk about it a lot of this idea that our deepest wound is often a doorway to our truest niche, that the places that we're most intimately familiar with, where we've struggled the most. And, you know, it's like sometimes the simplest question I can offer people to help them figure out their niche is like, what in your life have you had to overcome to even be here today?
Yeah, I love that question.
Because when people really look at that, it's like, wow, they really had to overcome some things. And I think something that's getting clear for me right now is how that often, I think, sets the direction of the niche. You know, it's just, what have we had to struggle with? But what I'm really feeling is like this whole idea of our gifts and our nature maybe doesn't inform the direction of the niche, but it does inform the flavor of it. It's kind of like it feels like that when we get clear on like, where have I struggled? Who else is struggling with that? Whether it's a direct thing, you know, because, you know, somebody might have struggled with Crohn's, and maybe they don't work with people with Crohn's directly, but they work with people, either just digestive disorders in general, or people who have situations that feel incurable, and they totally get what it's like to be in that, you know, situation. So whether it's direct or indirect, there's like at least a stick figure of a man. And I feel like the this idea of our gifts, our nature, starts to flesh out who would resonate. Because I think that that definitely lands with me, is that we tend to work with people we resonate with. And like, I imagine if, you know, somebody called you up and is like, hey, I'm looking for a life coach and, you know, I'm a secretary in a big Fortune 500 corporation and I'm just trying to, you know, want to live a better life. And, but the, you know, I just want to stay here at my desk at the job. I really love it. I just want to be more effective. That just would not be a fit for you. Like that you wouldn't light up. If, you know, there was no inclination towards adventure and freedom and joy. And so, and I noticed too, you know, it's like there's a certain thing about my values, like politically. There's certain people who, when they're in my workshops, I'm just like, wow, this is not a fit. So it's almost, I'm feeling like the, our vibe and our nature sort of puts some skin on the stick person or like some clothing on it and starts to give us a bit more of a sense of what that fit might be.
Yeah, and I think that in order to do that, you have to be really clear about, you know, who you are and what you're all about. And you have to be willing to put that out there and really stand behind it. And it could be really vulnerable to do that. It's kind of easier to stay safe and just be like, oh, I'm a life coach. I want to help everybody be happy and we're all going to have nice little lives. And, you know, I definitely have some strong values and some strong opinions about, you know, about work and about life that I stand behind on my blog and, you know, with my clients. And if I didn't do that, I wouldn't be attracting the people that I want to work with. And so I think in any business, it's super important to be as authentic as you can and as honest as you can about, you know, what you really believe in and what your values are so that, you know, your ideal clients come to you because they see you putting yourself out there and they go, wow, this girl is like, this is exactly what I need versus being, you know, the one who pleases everybody and then nobody really gets what you're doing and you kind of just get like washed into the little vanilla background and no one really notices you.
Yeah. So I'm curious. So your website is theuncagedlife.com. And I'm curious if you can share maybe where that name came from, but also in what ways you felt yourself, like what are the moments where you felt like, oh, this feels a little risky or edgy to say this or to say this thing in this way or to share this particular point of view? Like, what are the things that have felt a little vulnerable, but it felt like the most real that you've had to share? So maybe first, where did the name come from?
The name came from, you know, somebody else came up with the name, to be honest. Okay. I was working with, when I was first putting my website up, I was needing a little bit of help with just kind of coming up with a name and a tagline and trying to figure out exactly like how I wanted my site to be designed. And she was going to do a little bit of work for me. And we kind of brainstormed names, and I just gave her a blanket list of, you know, my values and what I really wanted to create. And she came up with a few ideas, and this one just stuck, and I loved it and, you know, bought it instantly. And it just seemed to fit. And I think for me, it represents Uncaged is about, you know, unleashing yourself from your self-imposed cage. So a lot of the time, you know, whether it's that you've let yourself get stuck in a job that you hate or are, you know, living in a city that you don't love or, you know, are in a relationship that's maybe not great or even just the inner workings of your mind that kind of are holding you back. It's breaking out of all of that stuff physically and emotionally and mentally and spiritually. So that's what the name's all about.
Yeah.
And I think it fits. I love it. And in terms of my website, I know from the beginning I didn't want to just be a life coach. And I'd looked at tons of life coaching websites and there wasn't one that I thought, this is really awesome. And I know that there are more, and I've discovered them since. But, you know, I sort of was able to look at all the stuff that I really didn't like about them and what I felt was missing. And that's not to say that for their business that wasn't great, but for the business that I wanted to create, it wasn't it. So I was able to kind of, you know, pick that stuff apart and decide to do the opposite. And for me, that was like bold colors and, you know, strong language and really
Are you there, Rebecca? Are you there? I can't hear you right now. Hold on just one second. I'll be right there.
provided by freeconferencing.com. Please enter your...
Hello?
Hey, you there?
I'm back, yeah.
Access code. Please re-enter your access code followed by the pound.
I was calling in another phone. So where we last left off was you were saying about your website, like big, bold colors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just didn't want to be another, sort of vanilla life coach, whatever that meant to me. I knew that I wanted to create something different.
Yeah.
And to me, that's, you know, that's represented in me just being really, really transparent on the site about where I'm at and what I've gone through and, you know, my beliefs about the world. And so most recently, just last week, I posted a post about the night that my mother died 4 years ago. And for me, it didn't seem, I want to say it didn't seem like a big deal to write it, because it was, and it was very moving just to write the post and actually publish it. But it wasn't like a faux pas. It wasn't like, oh my God, is this inappropriate? Is this going to make some people uncomfortable? Like I knew that was my story and I wanted to share my story. And I think that that's a big part of being really authentic in business. And, you know, it felt vulnerable to put it out, but it didn't feel inappropriate. And I guess, and, you know, I had a lot of comments, people going, wow, like, you know, I can't believe that you would share a story so personal. And like, it's, you know, it's really inspiring. They were all really great comments. But a lot of people had said, you know, oh, I wasn't sure what to think. Like, I didn't know if it was okay to comment. And, you know, people get really kind of weird and sensitive around issues mm-hmm. like that. And for me, I don't. And so I put that stuff out there because I think, you know, that stuff needs to be talked about. Our stories need to be shared. So that's one example of where I kind of, I don't know if it's stepping out of the mold, but it feels like a little bit risky. And, you know, I do it anyways.
Well, and it's interesting when you said you use strong language. I mean, you use words like, it was one of your programs, it was called What the Fuck Should I Do With My Life? Badass interviews. I've seen the word amazeballs a bunch of times.
Can I just say that,
yeah,
What the Fuck Should I Do With My Life? You know how many people have found my website because they've Googled What the Fuck Should I Do With My Life? And they're like, you were the first one to come up. And I'm like, that's awesome.
That's hilarious.
So you never know, you know, like I don't swear a lot, and I'm not. You. It's just like I tend to. I just tend to write the way that I talk in casual conversation, I guess. And so when I wrote those posts, I was like, oh well, that's a question that a lot of my clients ask me. They're like, I just want to know what the F to do. And so it turns out I rank in Google for that. So that's awesome.
That's hilarious. It strikes me how. So much of this, and I think people look at marketing, they tend to think of marketing as a very insincere thing, and it's a contrived thing. And yet, what seems to work the best is, because, and then when people are like, well, I don't want to be, you know, contrived, so they play it safe, and they do the generic thing. They do kind of what everyone else is doing, which, of course, doesn't have them mm-hmm. standing. But when people really just show up as themselves, and show up really authentically, and speak the way they normally speak, say what they really think, are willing to have opinions about things and are willing to share what's important to them and to share their own story and to design a website the way they want it designed. It's just amazing how much more it pops out and how much more unique it is. You know, your writing style, your voice that you've found is I think really particular and unique. So yeah, I really appreciate that.
And can I just say that I think what's cool about doing it that way is that finding your niche isn't contrived. Like the clients that resonate with what I'm putting out there come to me and they find me. And virtually all of my clients have just found my website and hired me from my website, which is not something I ever expected when I started. I thought, oh my God, I'm going to have to be networking and I'm going to have to be like asking people to be my clients. And they come to me because they, you know, they kind of follow my blog for a while and they see what I'm all about and they realize like, oh yeah, this works for me. And so I don't have to do the work of, you know, searching for clients because right away they know whether or not it's a fit for them.
Yeah, I've had the same experience. And I think something that you and I both do on our websites that probably gets us that. And I don't know how often I get an email, maybe once every week or so, once every couple of weeks. I get an email saying like, hey, do you do coaching? And sort of asking me that. But, you know, I tend to do more group programs than one-on-one anyways. But you and I both blog fairly frequently and tend to put up a lot of stuff on our blog, which I think, I mean, there's a lot of benefits to that. But to me, one of the big benefits is it just, and I don't know if you've had this, but people will sometimes say, yeah, I've been following you for years, and it's like, I totally got lost in your blog, and I just read a bunch of your posts, and it really allows people to get a flavor of you. So whether it's like a blog or video blogs, or you do like, you know, some audio that you put up, ways that people can just get a sense of the flavor of you before they ever have to do the scary thing of calling you or emailing you or making any kind of commitment to you at all. In my experience has been important, at least as a passive thing. It's not the most active marketing strategy, but I still get people contacting me and saying, yeah, I've been checking out your stuff for a while. I remember when we were talking, you had some examples of some of the clients that you've worked with and how them sort of really getting honest with who they are, what their strengths are, and sort of what they've gone through has helped them figure out their niche. So I'm wondering if you can share some of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. The first one that comes to mind is a friend of mine named Lauren, who I actually went through nutrition school with. And she kind of took a break after school and, you know, started getting back into nutrition, deciding she wanted to start her nutrition business. And it's, I mean, same as it was for me. It wasn't feeling exciting anymore. Like she'd led a few workshops and, you know, had, you know, taught people about blood sugar and how to regulate it and, you know, what are the best snack foods and, you know, all the kind of typical stuff. And it just wasn't feeling great. Like she wasn't excited about making menu plans and protocols. And so I did a sort of 2-hour business split session, I call them, with her, where we sort of get really, really clear about what we kind of take it away from business. And I actually do a few little exercises to get clear on what her life purpose is, which is like a really big thing to figure out. And then we sort of take that and go, you know, does this apply to your business? And it should. I guess my thought is that, you know, your purpose in life ideally has something to do with the work that you're doing. And so we came to realize that she was more about empowering people to make their own choices regarding food and listen to their bodies and sort of be able to figure it out versus following some kind of strict food rules.
Right.
And once she realized that, like, that's what it was really about for her, she realized she didn't want to work with people who were looking for, you know, an in-depth protocol to fix their digestion or, you know, the quickest diet tips to help them lose 10 pounds. She wanted to work with people in more of a coachy style who were really educated and already knew that stuff and were looking for more because they knew that there was a deeper connection with their mind to this whole food thing than just, you know, learning about what to eat. And so working from that place, it was easy to figure out her niche because she already knew. She's like, I want to work with women. I want them to know about food. I want them to, you know what kale is, know what quinoa is. I don't want to have to teach them about how much water they should drink. You know, I want women who have tried diets, who have, you know, gone to nutrition school and who are just looking for another way to think about, you know, their bodies and what it means to be a human being that eats. Yeah.
That's great.
So that was a cool realization. And so she's off doing that now at a little clinic in Sarnia, which is awesome.
Is that where she is now?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yep. She moved up there and opened up an office and is doing workshops and yeah, it's awesome. She calls it, and she even came up with her own little brand name for it. So she calls it Finding Your Foodsdom, which is like a combination between food and wisdom. Get it?
Nice.
Yeah. She's adorable.
It is interesting how sometimes, to me, there's always this question of like, who's a perfect fit with us? And that we're not going to be a fit for everybody. And so that the whole purpose of marketing is really about, for me, more of a filtering process, filtering out the people who aren't a fit, but letting the people who are a fit come through. And ideally filtering them before they even show up. But it's so interesting how somebody might approach and be like, yeah, I love educating people about the basics because nobody knows that. And I didn't know that at one point or whatever. But for her, she doesn't want that. She really wants to have those people who are kind of already at a certain point of readiness. And that's a question I would toss out for people listening. It's just like, sort of at what point on the journey do you want people to be? At what point of readiness do you want them to be? At what point of knowledge about this issue do you want them to be? But how do you want them to already be seeing the issue and how do you want them to relate to it? Because, you know, let's say you're a divorce coach. Well, you could pick them up right after the divorce when they just feel like a victim, and you might just love working with them at that point. And somebody else might say, you know what, I want to work with them like a year after, and I want to be working with people who get that their divorce could be a doorway into their own spiritual growth, but they just can't seem to find the way. But they need to be at that point and seeing things in that way.
Yeah, and I think getting down to, you know, the big why behind it, like what really is your purpose in life? Like, what are you really wanting to help people with? Or what are you really wanting to be? You know, how are you wanting to be of service in the world? And what do you want your impact to be? Helps answer that, because that gets you really clear on what it is, and you kind of work backwards and get to go, okay, you know, like for Lauren, you know, her life purpose was to empower people to really, you know, own their own life and be able to figure out the answers for themselves. And so then we worked backwards and said, well, how does that relate to nutrition? How can you have a nutrition business and fulfill that purpose? And, you know, she kind of connected the dots.
Yeah. Awesome.
Cool.
Number two.
Do you want another example?
Let's do it.
Let me see. Okay, so there was, am I supposed to use people's real names? I don't know. I guess so.
It's okay. It'd probably be.
Do I have to be sneaky about this? So one of my clients, Anna Maria, was one of my yoga teachers, and she came to me. And she was really wanting – she was bold when she came to me. She said, I really want to make a name for myself in the yoga business. And, you know, in the yoga and spiritual world, that's, you know, saying that is a little bit frowned upon.
Right.
You know, like nobody goes into yoga to make a name for themselves. But she was bold. She was like, I love this practice. I believe in it. And I want to make a name for myself, and I want to make it my business. Like, I'm serious about it. She's like, I'm sick of teaching in studios. I'm sick of, like, you know, kind of the airy-fairy way that a lot of yoga goes. You know, she really recognized that her more sort of raw, real style of teaching was really necessary for the results that she wanted her students to see. So she wanted to have a bigger impact than just go into a studio, stretch it out, you know, chant a little bit, and we're all good. Like, she was really wanting to get down to the core of what her yoga was about for her and bring that to other people. And so we did the whole life purpose thing with her, and, you know, her purpose statement was something about being the volcano that, like, erupts you to your truth. You know, it was really powerful. And when she came to that, it was like a switch just went off, and she was like, oh, my God, I have to just be myself. Like, I can't be afraid that this is going to be too much for my students. I have to be what I am and let them decide whether or not this is what they're needing right now. And so I guess it's the same thing as, you know, where are they on their journey? Someone brand new to yoga might be a little bit, you know, frightened by that, whereas others who have been practicing for a while might be wanting to get deeper into their practice through, you know, the way that Anna Maria was wanting to do it. And so I don't know if, you know, I'm not quite sure how that relates to her niche. But I guess it does in that she, you know, the niche will come to the people that she wants to work with will come to her because they'll recognize, you know, what she's putting out there.
It's, you know, I talk about it in niching as there's this idea of almost like a yin and a yang of niching. And the yang niching is where somebody's like, okay, I've got this target market in mind that I'm really excited about and I want to work with them. And we just go after them in a very outwards thing. And then I think the yin of niching is where we go inside and we're like, it's almost like you're a crafter and you're making some earrings or you're making t-shirts or something. But you're really like, I just want to make this the best art and the best expression that I can. And then you put it out into the world, and I think, like, and then you notice who responds. And I think the challenge is, like, at its worst, the yang style of niching can be a very cynical, contrived kind of niching where people arbitrarily pick a target market and go after it. But they lose their juju. They lose their mojo really fast because they're actually not that excited about that niche. But then the shadow side of the yin niching is where it's like the Van Gogh sort of situation.
Mm-hmm.
It's like he produces all this amazing art, but I don't think I would guess he didn't think about the marketing of it very much. And so he died very poor. And it just had me wonder how many artists there are who do this, where they produce all this amazing art, and it's genuinely great, but they never sort of have a conversation with the marketplace and just noticing who responds to what and paying attention to that. Because you might take your t-shirts, you know, or your crafts to some craft fair, and you think it's going to resonate with the teenagers, and it just doesn't. But middle-aged people, it really resonates with, or the grandmothers, it really resonates with. And sometimes it's hard to tell. Sometimes there's a certain amount of expression. Sometimes the people who you think would really respond to what you're doing don't. But other people do, and you get surprised. You're like, whoa, I didn't think those kind of people would be into this, but it's just what they're looking for. And then that can become a target market. Then that's where we move into the yang, and now we're actually going to go out and really get a bit more strategic, because you might realize, like, shit, I'm at all the wrong craft shows.
Yeah.
And
Or the people who are coming to you might not be the ones that you expected, and you might not want to work with those unexpected people. So then it's like, you know, how can I keep with my mission but you know, attract the people that I really want to work with also?
Right. And if it's not those people, there may be a question of like, okay, well, what is it about this that is attracting those, you know, people, and who else? And you may need to keep experimenting until you find a crew that you resonate with. But I see it again and again and again, where people have these unexpected target markets that show up, and these crowds that just love what they do and end up becoming the core of their, you know, it's like when I first started, I started thinking green business, and then all these holistic practitioners were showing up, and it took me a couple of years to really see that.
And yeah.
Like, oh, this is like this crowd, and, you know, I ended up beginning to explore it. So it just strikes me how important it is for people to really, when they put themselves out, like, it's just like dating or in a relationship. Your ideal kind of partner is going to be somebody who loves you for who you are when you're not being safe and when you're not, you know, trying to hold yourself together. They're just going to be like, I like you. All those things that you're nervous about, they're like, hey, I like that about you. You know, you're a huge Doctor Who fan. That's awesome. I love that.
And I think a lot of that you don't even really find that out until you start putting yourself out there and kind of like trial and erroring it. Like, you've got to start putting it out and seeing who's coming and, you know, getting their feedback in order to kind of tweak it and refine it and make sure that it's working the way that you want, and that you know, your clients are getting what you want, and that you're giving them what you want to be giving. And, you know, the only way to do that is to start doing it.
Right, because that's the only way they're going to see it to be able to even respond to it. And I think sometimes we're so afraid of the rejection. But to me, it's so clear. It's just like, it's not rejection. It's just like, oh, that's not a fit. They just didn't resonate with that. But somebody else might resonate really hard with it and really love it. You know, like there's punk rock yoga I heard about recently, where it's just like they do yoga, but they play punk rock music, or dubstep yoga, or it's called Get Low, and it's dubstep yoga. And like, you know, and different crowds of people are going to resonate with that in different ways. And one of the other things I picked up in what you said is this question of like, what's your yoga, you know, or whatever your modality is, whatever it is you're practicing, like, what's your way of doing that? Because like, I think yoga is just such a great example. Most people are familiar with it. And there's this sort of, most people have one kind of yoga in mind, a sort of typical yoga, but there's so many different styles, so many different approaches. Some teachers are so gentle and some are very brash and in your face. And, you know, it's like, I can't stand I've never been to a Bikram yoga class, can't even stand the idea of it. Other people seem to just love it, which blows my mind. But they do, you know, it's funny, like, so this question of like, what is, instead of just like, well, I'm a yoga teacher, well, yeah, but what's your yoga? What's your approach to it? How do you want it to be? And one of the other things I think might be a really useful exercise for people is, you're saying like you were looking at a bunch of different websites and just kind of looking at and not being inspired. And one of my colleagues, Michael Margolis, he's got a website, getstoried.com, and he helps people with sort of storytelling. And one of his big questions he has his clients ask is like, when you look at the marketplace of people sort of offering what you do, what's missing?
Mm-hmm.
Missing that you want to bring? Because there's something unique about you that you could be bringing. And it strikes me that you did that with websites. She did that with yoga. She probably went to a lot of different yoga classes and just felt like, God, there's something missing here. And when we talk about niche being like your place in the world, and you probably weren't on any of my intro. Were you on any of my intro calls about niching?
No, I was not. I'm really sorry. I live in a van. I have intermittent internet access right now. phone service, but...
When in researching it, I found that the word niche comes from the French verb niche, which means to make a nest. And so I love that, like, we're making our nest. We're making literally our place, our home in the world with our niche. And that one of the ways we can do that is, like, what's missing and kind of what's being called out of us when we like, oh, there's all this yoga, but nobody's being real. Nobody's being so raw. It's all so gentle. And I feel that intensity being pulled out.
Yeah. Business really, really calls you forth. Like, you really have to be a little bit gutsy and take the risk to put your true expression of whatever you're doing out there. And it's really scary and it's really vulnerable, and it's the only way. It's the only way to do it.
And to trust that what you feel is missing is missing, you know, and to trust mm-hmm. that what is being called out of you in response to that is something that is wanted by the world. And it might take a while to figure out, you know, who wants that and who would respond to it. Yeah, but nobody really wants a generic life coach, I don't think. You know, people want something that's a fit for them. Nobody just wants the boat that gets them from one island to the other.
Yeah.
It's not a particular kind of boat, always. So any other stories? I think there were a few more you had had.
Yeah, there was Ainsley. You know Ainsley, you know, the Doctor Who fan.
Yeah.
And also another girl that I knew from nutrition school, and, you know, eventually decided that she had a blog, and she blogged about vegan food. She's a hardcore vegan and came up with all these amazing recipes. And she realized after, you know, about a year of blogging and trying to kind of create this business, that what she really loved about her nutrition business was writing her blog posts. It wasn't about educating, you know, I'm sure she liked educating people and, you know, making all the delicious food, but she really just loved the writing. Like, she got to be as quirky and as, like, off the wall as she wanted to be. But she wasn't really interested in, like, the rest of it. It was just kind of a medium for her to be able to write. And when I worked with her, we came up with this idea that her, you know, her whole mission in life is to inspire creativity in herself, to inspire other people to be creative and to use that creativity. And she really believes that everything is creative. Like, starting a business, she thinks, is, like, the most creative endeavor that you can embark on. You know, you're creating something from nothing. And so yeah, it was more about being able to bring out other people's unique expression of creativity through the use of her own creativity and her own writing, that she, you know, that she decided that she wanted to start a business around. So she kind of ditched nutrition and ended up, I think she's working a little bit at it now, and she's still kind of toying with the whole creativity thing, and it's bigger than writing for her. But she started a copywriting business, doing copywriting for, like, small business entrepreneurs. And right away she knew that she didn't want to work with, you know, run-of-the-mill service providers. She really wanted to work with people who would get her kind of out there style and who wanted something a little bit different. So she helped me with a little bit of the copy on my website. And all of a sudden the idea of, you know, at first she thought, well, I don't want to work with entrepreneurs. That's just, like, that's just so typical and, like, everyone's doing that. And as soon as she realized that she was helping these people tap into their own creativity, like, the idea of entrepreneurs just totally opened up for her, and she got super excited about it.
It's so interesting how it keeps, I hear in the way you say it, keeps coming back to their why, like, why they're doing it, what it's really about for them at the end of the day. And I'm curious, how do you help people connect with that and find out what it is for them?
I have a few little tricks up my sleeve. But I tend to do, I've got sort of three really short visualizations. And, like, disclaimer, I'm not a huge visualization person myself, but they work for me, and they're just really great. They're just sort of three little short ones that I use, and they're just about, you know, like, if you could create anything in the world, like, what would you want to create? So I walk people through those, and we sort of look at the commonalities between, you know, the three scenarios that they've come up with, and it's usually pretty easy to see what they're all about. Like, their responses to the visuals are generally pretty similar for all three of them. And then we actually put together, like, a statement. Like, so we sort of put it into a one-sentence, like, life purpose statement, which can be really big and, you know, a little bit scary to actually define. Mm. And it usually, I mean, so I'll give you mine for an example. My life purpose is being able to experience everything that life has to offer, and, you know, inspiring other people to do the same. And so it sounds like, even if it sounds a little bit contrived, it's like, I know what it means to me. And so everyone that I work with, they, you know, they figure out what it really means to them. Yeah, maybe I should put those visualizations on my website so people can do them on their own.
Possibly. Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I think it's tricky to write visualizations.
I know, I was thinking the same thing.
Because then people read it and they're like, oh, I got the punchline already, and now I don't get to be tricked by it and, like, surprised.
Yeah, well, I could. Do you want me to do a short one now? Do we have time? It'll be, like, a minute. It's not long.
Let's not, because I just feel like it's going to get transcribed, and I know everyone who's on the call.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, cool.
But it's going to be transcribed. I want people to really, and people can work with you also if they want a book session to explore that kind of thing. But yeah, so it does seem like there's this process of sitting with ourselves and, like, what is it that that we're called to do, and looking at our businesses in terms of or looking at the marketplace and, like, what's missing. I feel like that also that brings a part of it.
Another way, I mean, without strict visualization too. Another way to kind of get down to that is to look at your life and, like, how have you lived your life and what's really been important to you? Where do your values lie, you know, based on the experiences that you've had and the way that you've chosen to live? And then from that, like, you know, what have you really always been about? Like, I think that we've sort of always lived this way. I don't think that it's necessarily something that, you know, you just decide, like, this is going to be my life purpose. I think that it's always been in you, so you can sort of look backwards at your experiences and try to pull it out from that. Like, what are sort of the commonalities and the common values that lie behind everything that you've always done in your life and the way that you've always been?
Yeah. Yeah. Were there any other examples?
Yeah, I can give you another one. There was Ashley, who's another yoga teacher and also nutritionist, seemed to like to work. I think I seem to like to work with small business owners, and when I started, they all happened to be nutritionists, so it worked really well for me. And she, you know, totally opposite of Anna Maria, she was really all about connecting back down to your truth, but in a much more gentle way, and she really loved exploring work through, like, body work and Reiki to reconnect with people to who they really are. And working with her, I realized that, you know, she was working through her process of doing this. And so this is why she connected so deeply with this, is that she'd had her own struggles of depression and trying to really find out, like, who is she in this world and reconnect back to who she really was. Mm. And in order for her to really have the impact that she wanted on the clients that she was wanting to work with, she had to model that kind of vulnerability and that kind of honesty. And so part of her process of starting her business was getting used to putting herself out there. When we started, she was, you know, she had her website up and it was kind of just a typical, you know, about me section. And I remember reading it going, what the hell is this? Like, this doesn't tell me anything about, like, what you're all about. And, like, that's what I want to know, because that's how I connect with you. That's why, you know, I've loved chatting with you in the first place, is because you have this really deep, meaningful story. And unless you're sharing that with people, like, they're not going to get why you stand out from anyone else. And so part of her practice with her business was, you know, putting herself out there and just noticing the reaction and how people responded. And of course, it was terrifying for her, and of course, people responded with total love, and just, you know, they were able to connect with her on a deeper level because of it.
And when you say, it's interesting, this process of sort of sharing vulnerably, I think sometimes where people can get caught up with this is like, well, does that mean I talk about my childhood abuse? Does that mean I share gory details and, you know, about my life? I'm curious what your experience has been with that.
I'm sorry, you cut out for just a second there. I heard gory details.
I'm just curious what your experience has been in terms of when you say sharing vulnerably or sort of even encouraging people to do that. What's your experience been with yourself or with clients in terms of what does that look like?
Yeah, it can be tricky. I think that with myself, I'm all about it. I really think that, you know, the reason that I have this business and the reason that I am the type of coach that I am and that I'm living this life that I am is because of these experiences. And they, you know, there's no shame for me wrapped up in them anymore. There's no guilt. There's no, you know, none of that. I've worked through them. And so I feel that I'm able to talk about them in a way that supports my message.
Right.
I think that it's when, and I feel strongly that anybody can do that. And I think everyone will have a different level of comfort as to, you know, how much they want to get into about their story. And in some businesses, you know, you really have to get into it. You have to let people know. And in some, it's not as necessary.
Right.
So I think it's a personal thing. But I do really believe that if you're still struggling with something, like if there's still, especially shame around something that's happened, or like you're currently going through something, it's likely not appropriate to bring it into your business and start talking about it. Because that's when it starts to feel, it's not coming from an empowered place. It's coming from some other place that just doesn't feel as good. Like, I think when you look back at experiences, you're able to look at how you've grown from them and how you moved on and what you learned. And when you're going through them, it's kind of trickier to work through that publicly.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my only, you know, my only rule with that. But I think it's a personal thing. And I think a little bit of sharing is necessary. And, you know, a lot of sharing is up to your own personal values and beliefs about how much you want to reveal.
And I think it occurs to me there are different things that we can be sharing that can help people figure out, is this a fit and do I resonate with this person? Part of it is like what's happened in our past in terms of our childhood and those experiences. But there are also experiences of just, here's something that happened to me today and here's what it made me think of and here's how I reflect on it. Or here's a current event that's in the news and here's my take on that. I think a lot of times people just want to hear the way you react to things that they might have experienced too. Like, hey, I had bad customer service at a restaurant. Here's what it made me think about. They want to see the world through your eyes. And the more that you can be giving them the flavor of, here's what it looks like through my eyes, here's how I see things, I think the more likely they are to trust you because they're getting a sense of your point of view. They're getting a sense of your perspective. And that's ultimately why I think why people hire us and trust us, is because they like our take on things. I think they're drawn to us because of, like, ultimately there's a relevance of just, can you help me solve my problem? Can you help me get where I want to go? Big picture, there's the resonance of the why. And it's like, well, we're both about the same thing. Like, we're both about adventure. And so I just really resonate with that. And I just feel like so much of the trust comes from, and also some level of resonance comes from, this point of view. And do we see the world the same way? You know, do we, you know, are we looking at it through similar enough eyes that it's a fit? Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that it's, you know, there's got to be a reason for your sharing. It's not just like, hey, here's my personal story, my personal blog.
Right.
I ate a pizza today. Woohoo! It's like there's got to be a bigger relevance to, you know, whoever your audience is, and like a deeper message behind it, so that they can actually get something out of it. You know, it's not, your business is not your own little personal online journal. There's a way, and you're brilliant at doing this, where you can take an experience and sort of take the main message out of it and then apply it to, you know, how does that actually apply for the people reading this blog, and why does it matter to them? Why should they give a crap about it?
Yeah, because it's interesting. I mean, in terms of like, yeah, most of your best friends don't even want to read your journal on a regular basis, you know? And
yeah.
They're your best friends, and they love you. So it's like hearing people's unprocessed thoughts. Your therapist, they get paid to do that. But yeah, people are going to come to you because they want some value from you. There's something they're looking for, some kind of help. So yeah, us just sharing our unfiltered, unprocessed thoughts that we're still struggling with and ashamed of. There's nothing wrong with sharing it. But yeah, I don't know if it's the same as building that kind of real intimacy. And
Yeah, there's got to be a reason behind why you're sharing that stuff. You know, it's not about playing the victim and trying to get people to like you because they feel bad for you. It's like, it's got to be coming from a place of wanting to empower other people to learn something new about themselves or about the world.
Yeah. So I'm curious, let's sort of go back and forth. Not the visualizations, but just if there are exercises people can do on their own to kind of reflect on their why and what's most important to them. One thing that, it's funny, I haven't done this for a while, but it's such a simple, easy exercise is I call it the attraction quadrant. And I'll have people make a quadrant, you know, four squares. And on one side, there are things that are attractive about your business. And there are things that are attractive to you about your business. Like, these are the parts of your business that you love doing. So it's like, maybe you don't like doing the paperwork, but you love the coaching sessions, or you don't like doing coaching, but you love actually cooking the food, you know, whatever it is. You really think about, what are the parts of my business that bring me alive? The things that when I get to do this part, I'm like, I just wish this was all I got to do, you know. You lose track of time. But then the other parts are things that are attractive about your business to your clients. So maybe that's your hours, maybe it's your rates, maybe it's your quirky personality. And this is, it's interesting. The things that we love about our business, I find, are pretty easy to figure out. And most people don't really consciously reflect on that a lot. The things that are attractive to our clients, most people are just clueless about. They're like, I don't know, I've never asked. And so this is where we can start asking me, like, well, what is it you really love about working with me? And sometimes it's a surprise, like Thomas Leonard, who's one of the grandfathers of modern life coaching movement. He was a financial advisor. And he just started asking his clients, like, why do you love working with me? What do you get out of it, you know, beyond just the basics? And this one couple was like, you're our marriage counselor. And he was like, what? And he's like, yeah, we always have fights about money, but you just make it better. You listen really well, and you just, like, I don't know, you have your Jedi skills, and then we're not fighting anymore. So we have a rule. You don't talk about money unless Thomas is there. And they're like, you've totally saved our marriage. So sometimes the things that people get out of what we do, it's not always how we see it. But it's good to figure out. So I feel like that's the first sort of level of the quadrant. It's just, what's attractive to you about your business that you really love, and what's attractive to your client. But then there's this sort of second level, the two squares under, which would be like, what is it that's unattractive to you about your business? Like, what's stuff that you do not like doing? So the paperwork, the cooking, giving people very basic education about stuff, leading mantras and chants, doing your yoga, whatever it is. What are the parts that you don't like, and to trust that? To trust there's a reason you don't like it. Because I think sometimes I can imagine a yoga teacher being like, oh, I don't like all these mantras and chants. There must be something wrong with me. Therefore, I'm going to try to fit myself into this mold, or, you know, or paperwork. Well, I hate it, but it's just required, so I should just do it and suck it up. Just be real with yourself. What do you hate? What drains you? What are the parts that you would honestly, you either would avoid or you just and make a list of those. And then there are also the things that your clients find unattractive about your business. And that's always interesting to look at. Like, what are the parts that they don't dig so much? Make a list of those things. And to me, it's like the goal is, like, can you eliminate the things that are unattractive about your business to you and to them? Because if you can eliminate those, and if you can accentuate the things that are attractive and even deepen it and add to those, I think that's really powerful. But I think there's something in it of, like, looking at our business, however much experience we've had, the things that we find attractive or unattractive, and to really ask ourselves, like, to go the second step and then be like, well, why do I love that piece? What is it about that? What does that mean to me? Why, you know, why does that matter so much? And why do I hate this part so much? What is it about that? And what, you know, do you hate doing the meal plans? Because it's so not about that for me. So about a whole different thing, and the meal plans don't address that. Okay, but that's your way in to start exploring and figuring out how you see it, what you love, what you don't love, what's missing. That seems like an exercise as a way to start. Does anything come to mind on your side?
I was just thinking about it. I just had a flashback to that conversation we had a few years ago in Toronto where I think you were kind of walking me through, you know, all the things that I love. And I was like, well, I love yoga, and I love traveling, and I love rock climbing, and I love having adventures. And I love, you know, nutrition. And at that time, I was like, okay, how do I make all of these things into a business? Right. And, like, for the life of me, I could not figure out how the hell to fit every single one of my hobbies and passions into a business. And I think you see a lot of that around the internet these days of, like, you know, create a passion-based business. You know, your passions and hobbies can become your business. And I think that's totally true. But I think what I've realized more so is that for me, it was the lifestyle that I was craving. I wanted a lifestyle that let me enjoy those things. And it wasn't necessarily that every single one of those pieces had to be a part of the business that I created, but I wanted to create a business that allowed me to do those things. So taking a good look at the lifestyle that you want. Do you want to be working in an office, or do you want to be able to work from anywhere? Do you want to be doing paperwork, or do you want to be, you know, calling clients on the phone, or do you want to have programs that run themselves online so you can stay home with your kids? It's a really good way of, you know, figuring out what to offer versus just going with a generic, like, well, I guess I'll offer a service, and I guess I'll write an ebook, and, you know, like, it's hard to know really where to start and what to really offer people. And I think when you do it, I like doing everything backwards in case you haven't noticed. When you do it backwards and you figure out, you know, what will allow me the lifestyle that I want. Right now I live in a van with my boyfriend, and we're traveling around the world rock climbing, and I'm running my business from my van. And, like, that's the ultimate lifestyle for me. And so I had to create a business that fit with that. I couldn't create a service-based business in an office in downtown Toronto.
Right.
I think that looking at it that way is a good way to sort of help gear you towards what you should be working on and what probably isn't for you.
I love that. Yeah, I got that from Alex too, you know, who of course you know. I just did an interview with him the other day, and yeah, it strikes me. And what's so interesting about it, because Alex and I did a workshop together called Marketing for Hippies and Gypsies, and
that's awesome.
In California, and but it struck me how when people start with a lifestyle and think, well, yeah, what do I want, and then what kind of business would fit that lifestyle, and what would I have to do, and what would I have to do differently? That's the kind of lifestyle you want. That's what's going to fill you up and make you happy. And you want to be happy. And so your ideal clients are going to be the kind of people who would also basically resonate with the style that you want to offer. And that's not an excuse for not coming up with good offers or thinking things, you know, and all that. But they're going to be the kind of people who would think, that's so rad. Of course, I'd love to do it that way. You know, if you are somebody who loves to go to sleep at 9 p.m. and you wake up at 5 a.m., your ideal clients are not going to be night owls who want to do a coaching session with you at 1 a.m. You know, it seems so obvious, but it's interesting how people will bend themselves into a pretzel to try to be everything to everybody and be like, oh, no, well, it's like, I don't normally coach over the phone, but yeah, I could do it with you. Or I don't normally do it in person, but I could. One of my, you know, did you ever meet Russell Scott?
I don't think so.
Older fellow, lovely guy. He's actually in this program right now. I might be listening, but lovely man in Guelph. And he did a meditation retreat. And he liked doing one-on-one stuff, but the thought of just doing it over the phone one-on-one wasn't quite as appealing to him as he used to have this ecology retreat center, but he'd have people come and do a personal retreat, and then he would visit with them a few times a day. And that was the kind of style he really loved. And he'd like sit with them, kind of give them some mentoring and some coaching, ask them some questions, give them an exercise to go away, do it for a few hours, and come back and sit with them. But they came to visit him, and he really loved that kind of style. And it just strikes me that particular style or predilection on how to do things is going to be really attractive to some people and unattractive to other people, but it'll start to filter who would be a good fit for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've definitely had clients call me and say, oh, I prefer to coach in person. And I have to say, well, I'm in small town Wyoming, so that's not really going to work.
Right.
And that's cool. You know, I'm not the right fit for them, and they're clearly not the right fit for me, and that's fine.
Yeah. So I guess I'd love to open up, but if anyone's listening, if they have any questions, they can write them on the wall in our Facebook group. So maybe just take a couple of minutes. Feel free to ask any questions that you have. And I'm trying to think what else came up for me. One of the other exercises that I found can be really interesting for people, just when you talk about this question of how have you lived your life, is I'll have people, there are two different lists. One is to make a list of what's all the jobs or things that they've done up until now. And then the second is to make a list of what's everything they've ever wanted to be. From like when the earliest thing they can remember, wanting to be a princess to, you know, wanting to be a public speaker, whatever it is. And I'll go through with people and I'll say, okay, this thing you did before, like, what were the parts you loved about it and what did you hate about it? You know, you're not doing it anymore, so there's probably some reason why you're not doing it anymore. And we make a list of that, and then I'll go through what are all the things they've always wanted to be, and just one by one. It's like, why did you want to be that? What was it about that? And it is so interesting how the common threads start to show up. And I like that exercise because it's very reality-based. It's very, like, based in people's life experience. And, yeah, there are a lot of just things that show up that can be really informative, I think, in terms of sort of niches for the future. And yeah.
Yeah, that just reminded me of just a small little exercise that I'd like to do with people where you write down, like, all of your should statements. So, you know, if you're starting a business, I should make my website like this, and I should, you know, I should have it like this. All the things that you think you should be doing. And usually, you know, come up with a list of at least 25 things. And then cross out the shoulds and change them to I want to. And notice which ones change. Notice the ones where you're like, oh, I really do want to do this. And, you know, if you're writing, I want to, you know, do my own accounting, and that doesn't feel like a fit for you, you know, take a big black marker and cross that one right off the list. That's a good way to narrow down, kind of like your quadrant idea. Like, what, you know, where is a good idea to be investing your time, and, you know, what are you doing just because you feel like that's the way it should be done?
That's such a to me, like, a kind of perfect bookend for this conversation is the way that people have the sense of the way things ought to be, the way things should be done. You know, and Patty Lund, the dentist, I share that example all the time. People have this sense of, like, what a dentist office should be. So they open up their dentist office and they all look the same. They're all so generic. And nobody stops and thinks, you know, like, maybe it could be better. Maybe it could be different, you know. It's like the way things should be. It's like there's so many things, I think, that are invisible. Alex Baisley talked about how even though he, like, created his Reiki business and he could have done it any way he wanted, he still put himself in an office working 9 to 5 every day. And he noticed that most of his clients, even though they're self-employed, they can do anything. They'll be like, oh, I can't fit yoga into my schedule. It's like, why not? Well, I work 9 to 5. It's like, you're your own boss. You can work any hours. What's wrong with you? You know, but still, just, there are these invisible societal boxes, I think, that we put ourselves in that we don't even realize are there. They're just so a part of the matrix. And so, of course, we work 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. You know, and we try to make a little bit of money every day, but it's like, wow, well, what if you made all your money in one weekend every month and you just work to, you know, promote that event? And so, you know, there's so many different models and different ways of doing it. You know, here you are living in a van with your boyfriend, driving across the country, rock climbing. You know, that's, I just think that's so not an option most people think about. I'm curious, what's your experience of how you get people out of the box? Because I think most people, even if they figure out something they're passionate about, they're just going to default to the typical way it's done. And how do you get people sort of to, like, well, what's a different way to do it? You know, what's your yoga piece, or does that come back?
Yeah,
to
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, everyone's out of the box is different for them. So I certainly don't advocate that everybody needs to go live in a van and climb their way around the world. So, you know, I think once people realize that, or not even realize, because I think that we always realize it, but once they're able to really voice it and, you know, accept that, wow, like, the way I'm doing this isn't making me happy and this is what I really want to do, and once they're able to kind of start getting inklings of what that big dream really is, just working with them to stay really connected to it, and a lot of the same stuff you said, like, you know, why do you want to do that? What's really important about that for you? And right away, you know, doing small little things to take action towards it, whether that's, you know, making a little vision board and putting it right next to their computer, or, you know, telling a few of their friends about it and kind of creating little accountability buddies to keep them moving. But I really think that once you get a glimpse into what it could be like and what you really want it to be like, it's really, you know, once you get excited about that, it's really hard to go back. I mean, it's easy to go back because it's the easy path, but it's always... You always have these little inklings that, like, oh, you know, I should be following this other thing. And eventually everyone gets to that point differently of where they decide it's time to really make the move. But I do believe that once you've really got a clear picture and a feeling of what that life would be like, it's hard to live any other way.
I'm curious who's I'm curious who's inspired you in terms of businesses or lifestyles, like who you've looked at in terms of their business and their lifestyle that you've been like, wow, that's inspired you in some way to be doing what you're doing, or like who or what businesses kind of, and you know, it could be sort of within the coaching thing, it might just be other kind of businesses that you're like, wow, that's so cool and offbeat and quirky, or
I love a girl called Ash Amberger, who has a website called The Middle Finger Project. And do you know her stuff?
Yeah, I love it already.
She's awesome. And she's I remember I found her site years ago when she was kind of like promoting the like, oh, like you don't have to live life, you know, in at the 9 to 5 and like, you know, escape the grind and go do your own thing. It can be done. But combining that with like actual business advice. And now she's blown up and she's like uber popular in sort of the online blogging world and has just sort of a really radical outlook at how to, you know, how to do business your own way. And her stuff is awesome. And I, you know, I have all of her online products that she's bought, that she's made, and they're all super helpful. And I just love the way that she's so authentically like who she is, and people love it. Like she's kind of exploded in that scene, and it's so cool to watch. So I really like her. Who else? I love the way that you work, Tad. I remember when I met you, I was thinking, man, like, so cool to just like travel around and do like big chunks of workshops and then have big chunks of time off. Like it sounded so cool, and it's not typical, I don't think, or at least to me, it, you know, that wasn't even in my realm of like, oh, that's an option, you know, to take a workshop on the road and do it that way. Yeah, I'm sure there's more. I'm drawing a bit of a blank, but it tends to be people who are willing to really like put their true selves out there without any worry about it, and who are like wildly successful because they've done that. That's sort of been my model and what I hope to achieve. I hope I'm doing well.
Yeah, you are. It really is. It strikes me too. That's such a great way people can learn is like both by looking at like what's missing, but also like what inspires you, like what are the role models that you see, and it, you know, it's like to look out into the world, like who's doing business in a way that inspires you, whether it's sort of how they do it, the tone of it. Like I'm just looking at this middle, check it out, themiddlefingerproject.org. hilarious. I love it because entrepreneurs do it better and vulgar titles are funny. I love this woman.
Yeah.
Totally.
She's awesome. And I think that it gets scary when you start looking at, you know, who's doing it the way that I want to be doing it, because then this whole idea of, oh my God, it's the competition starts to set in, and that can be overwhelming and that can hold you back. And there's a really great book. Have you read or heard of The Blue Ocean Strategy?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if that's what the book's actually called. But this idea that, you know, you can eliminate competition by sort of viewing the marketplace as this blue ocean versus this red ocean where like all the sharks are fighting each other and there's blood everywhere, but this blue ocean where it's like endless possibilities. So they have a strategy in the book where you you sort of take a look at the industry now and you map out like what they're doing. So everything from price point and, you know, pre-sale and after sale and you know, what their websites are like and how much time they usually take with clients, like any variable that you can think of, and you sort of map it out on a little graph, like X and Y axis. Mm-hmm. And then you do the exact opposite. So, and not, you know, that comes back to, you know, what's missing in the industry. So I know Marie Forleo talked about this a little bit. She was loving going to presentations and like, you know, weekend workshops and stuff, but they were always like held in these like airport hotel conference rooms and were all kind of the same. And they were always like, you know, feeling a little bit stuffy. And, you know, so she took that model and she turned it around, and she now does these live events, Rich, Happy and Hot live events that are just like geared towards like sassy, fun women entrepreneurs. And she's, you know, she's turned the whole weekend networking seminar event upside down, and it's working crazy successfully for her.
And where does she do them now, if not at hotels?
I'm not sure if they're at hotels, but I think it's I'm not sure where she does them. But, you know, the idea is that, like, the venue is, like, it feels good to be there. And everything down to, like, you know, the lighting makes you look good. There's none of this, like, fluorescent lighting. And,
interesting.
The snacks they serve make you feel really good. And just, like, the care that they give you before the event and making sure that you're prepped to go and do you need anything and afterwards. And just, like, all the little tiny details that she just felt were missing from sort of the other stuff that she was always going to. She's filled in all those little gaps so that the experience to the customer, you know, the price point is higher too. So she said, well, I'm going to really price this at a premium price and I'm going to just like blow their minds away with all the little extras. So I think that's a cool way of looking at it and not stressing about, you know, any kind of competition because really everyone's so different that there's no competition for what you do. But when we're starting, we tend to think that way that, you know, well, somebody's already doing this, so why should I bother? It's a good way to kind of get that out of your head.
Totally, because otherwise it'd be like, God, there's already there are other yoga teachers in the world, so there's no, you know.
Yeah, so, like, you don't have to think of something totally unique and different. You know, you just have to put your own unique spin on it.
I like that. Totally. It's like, yes, it's a boat. Yes, there's lots of other boats, but you can paint it differently. You can decorate it differently. You can have people wearing different costumes on it. You can have an outrageous name on your boat. Totally.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat. It's always excellent to chat with you.
Thank you for having me. It's so fun to talk to you.
So, yeah, people want to check you out. Your website is theuncagedlife.com. I'm curious if they want to check you out. What are the options for working with you? Where would you suggest they start? What's the deal?
I would suggest just, like we were talking about, check out my blog and see what's up, and, you know, if you like it, cool. If you don't, that's cool. I work with clients one-on-one on, like, a monthly basis for coaching, and it tends to be, you know, mostly people who don't know what they want to do with their lives or a lot of small businesses who are starting out and wanting to get really clear on a lot of the stuff that we talked about today, you know, who their market is and what their purpose is. And then I also do sort of business split sessions where we do all of that in, like, a two-hour phone call. So instead of ongoing coaching, it's just sort of a one-off, you know, get it all out and send you on your way so you can actually get out there and start building your business from a place that feels really authentic to you. So those are the two services I offer now, and I'm creating in the middle of creating an online course.
Awesome.
That will, yay, pre-sales on Wednesday. I've never done this before, so it's so much fun to be putting it together and to be, like, launching a pre-sale and figuring all this stuff out, you know, on my rest days from climbing. So, yeah, pre-sale for that starts on Wednesday, and then hopefully it'll be ready to go beginning of September.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I can't wait till you put out your product on how to travel around in a van and run a business from here.
I know. Maybe I should just write a blog post about that. I mean, it's really simple. I have the internet. It's like all I go to a coffee shop, do your work on the internet. Have fun while you're not working.
I swear, I think that would actually be a really popular blog post, how to run your business from a van.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. And see, there's another thing that it just kind of happened so naturally that I never thought that would actually be something that I should, you know, maybe be putting out to the world and giving to people. So thanks for that.
It is funny you say it because, like, I've had people, and at some point I'm going to do this. Like, people, just recently, a lot of my friends in Edmonton is like, Tad, you've got the coolest life. And at first I was like, oh, you know. After a while, I was like, wow, a lot of people seem to be impressed with my lifestyle because it's like I'm going to London, England, and doing workshops and then, you know, traveling around Canada, yada, yada, yada. And so people are just like, that's amazing. And, you know, but it never struck me that it was amazing. It was just, in my mind, I was just hustling. You know, I was just like, I got to pay the bills. I've got to make money. I have to do workshops. I've got to do the workshops somewhere. Can't do them all in Edmonton. So I'm going to have to travel. So that's all it was. It wasn't like necessarily me trying to create this awesome lifestyle. It was just like, I got to do workshops. Where do I want to do them? I have friends there. I've always wanted to go to London. I'll go there. And, so, you know, I was appreciating it. It was fun, but it never occurred to me as something sort of extraordinary until people kept pointing it out. And then I was like, they're like, how do you, and they kept asking me, how do you do this? And I was like, well, it's easy. You know, you just set up a workshop. But how do you do that in a city where you've never been? It's like, oh, well, you just find a hub who will sponsor you. Then Max, you know, and that just all seems real to me because it's what I've done. But I was like noticing as I was sharing these things, people were like taking notes, and like that was, it was really new information for them. And I was like, wow. So at some point, I'm totally going to come up with some ebook. I'm like, here are my thoughts on how, like, how to travel and do workshops. Because I think it's just, in my mind, it's like, well, that's how you do it. But most people either don't want to travel and do workshops, or, you know, or they haven't thought about that. And yeah, so it's interesting to really look at what are the things that you do that seem to impress other people? Because that's
yeah.
what you could teach.
And you kind of become your own branding. And it took me a while to be okay with saying that. But, like, my brand at The Uncaged Life, like, is me. And, like, my life is friggin' awesome right now. And
yeah.
so I'm okay with, you know, talking about it on the blog and being like, here's where I am, this is awesome, you know. And I want people who are looking at me going, wow, like, that is a really cool life. Because it is a really cool life. And I've worked really hard to get here. But it is possible if this is what you want. And so, you know, you kind of have to really stand behind your brand. And I think that this is my ultimate way of doing that.
Yeah. So awesome. Cool. Well, I love you. You're so great. Enjoy the rest of climbing and rock climbing. And we will touch base down the road. And everyone, go to theuncagedlife.com. You can sign up for her email list. She's got really awesome, sassy, edgy kind of blog posts that are really useful. Check out the rest of her stuff on her site. Be ready for her van, living, traveling blog post. yeah, we'll see you down the road.
Coming soon. Thanks, Tad.
Take care. Bye.
Love you. Bye.